The House Veterans Affairs Division will come to order, and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Chair Davis, would you lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Representative Lee, would you pass the February 16 meeting minutes?
Mr. Chair, having reviewed the minutes for February 6, I have moved for approval of it.
Okay, Representative Lee moves the approval of the February 6 minutes. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The first bill on the agenda, we're going to go with House File 910. Representative Hillstrom, welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 910.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, House File 910 relates to an issue of disabled veterans and their homestead exclusion. This makes a modification. So under current law, the maximum benefit for a disabled veteran's homestead exclusion is if they're 100% disabled. 910 allows a veteran that is 100% disabled and temporarily disabled to qualify for the maximum benefit as well. In addition, the bill increases the maximum benefit from $300,000 market value excluded to $400,000. Members, I have one testifier with me today on this bill. If I might ask for the testimony, Mr. Chair.
Representative, I also, when I moved your bill, it will be going to Taxes Committee, the great Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, testifiers, would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Bergson. I'm a veteran of both the United States Army and the United States Air Force, having served 23 years. I deployed in support of Desert Storm, Bosnia, and most recently Afghanistan, where I was injured. I'm here to testify in favor of House File 910. As Representative Hillstrom stated, it gives a very, I would say, necessary benefit to veterans that have been qualified as 100% disabled. In order to meet that threshold, you have to go through the VA system, which is very rigorous. And if someone is suffering in that regard, they're most likely not working. So this exclusion really does a lot to help out veterans and allows them to stay in their home, which is very, very good for their treatment. As Representative Hillstrom stated, some veterans are labeled as 100%, but it's not permanent total, P&T is what the term is. And they get reviewed, and in some instances those reviews are 5 years out. But if they're rated at 100%, again, they're probably not working, and they're going to the VA a lot, and it would be very hard for them to get gainful employment. That doesn't mean that some of them don't, but if you're rated at 100%, it's a pretty high bar to work. And so what this bill would do would give those people that are not permanent in total the same benefits as those that are permanently disabled at 100%. So I appreciate your support on the legislation.
Any questions from the committee? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against? Representative McWay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, we heard a bill in committee that kind of indexes with the $300,000 property tax exemption currently, $150,000 if you're 70, 80, 90. And I just wanted to understand more. So if we do $400,000 for 100%, is there a plan to maybe index that down for folks who are 70, 80, 90, 99% disabled?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Makeweight, this was just one provision that I put. It's my understanding there are a bunch of other provisions, and so I'm hoping that I get lumped into the pool as they make all of those other changes and that we're just part of that larger picture.
And
committee members, you know, this is something we've been dealing with for several years. We've made progress on it with other legislation that has been passed in the past, and so it's good to see other legislators come forward and maybe try to do some tweaks on this legislation, the statute. So any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, I ask for your support for this proposal. I believe that folks who are temporarily 100% disabled should be eligible for this benefit as well.
Okay. With that, the chair reviews his motion that the House File 910 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And while you're in the hot seat, Governor Hillstrom, the next bill on the agenda is House File 728. And Representative Hillstrom, would you, I will move your bill. The committee that is to be referred to is the State Government Finance Committee. Representative Hillstrom, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is almost a little omnibus bill dealing with veterans issues. Members, I learned about multiple gaps in the system, and many of you know them much better than I. But these were some of the provisions that were identified, and then I contacted Jeff Diebel. We worked together to come up with this language. So I'd just like to walk you through the provisions, and then I have a few testifiers. Section 1 is funds expenditures. It directs the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to use the state soldiers' assistance funds to issue grants to veterans that are required by court order. So substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment, and these grants should be issued, you know, on a case-by-case basis, looking at the veteran's total circumstances. So I understand that there's concerns with the fund and whether or not you expand without giving money. So in this bill, I actually have a blank line for appropriation of additional dollars, because ultimately I know that it needs additional funds. There actually is an author's amendment, Mr. Chair, related to section number 2. There's a gap in nursing home availability. There's a waiting list for veterans' homes. And the goal of section number 2 is to allow people who are on the waiting list who might be able to get into a private nursing home to get a tax credit. Or a tax exclusion. And so there is an amendment that was drafted by nonpartisan staff. It was just a drafting error, and the A2 amendment puts it in the shape that I intended it to be in.
President Hillstrom, is there any questions on the A2 amendment? And all in favor of the A2 amendment, please say yes.
Yes.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section number 3 is a state health insurance study and report. And this really is a study to see if we should allow veterans and resident members of the National Guard who meet federal health care eligibility to buy into one of the State Department funds for medical assistance or the Minnesota Care program. Members, this is consistent with one of the proposals that the governor has put forward. This really is a study to see if it's viable and feasible to allow that to happen. Section 4 is about the Honor Guard. It appropriates funds to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to compensate Honor Guards at funerals for veterans. Members, we're hearing that there is a shortage issue. I'm sure you've heard that before. And we believe that this is really an important item, and we want to make sure that it continues for a long time. So section number 5 is for homeless veterans. It's a grant that appropriates money to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to allow and assist with homeless veterans and veterans homeless prevention. We really believe that providing housing for homeless veterans is one of the best things that we can do to honor our veterans. Section 6 is veterans domestic abuse prevention, and it also appropriates money in public safety grants to allow for domestic abuse projects and to offer change step program. That's my understanding that is one of the programs available to veterans. It doesn't have to be that specific program, but we want to make sure that it actually is a program that deals with issues specific to veterans in related to domestic violence counseling and education. Section number 7, it relates to mental health and substance abuse treatment, and it appropriates money to allow for that. And the last section is section number 8. Members, the Public Safety Committee has consistently been in favor of treatment courts And veterans courts are one of the things that are popping up that we believe are really important to provide. There are additional services that can be provided through veterans courts that not everyone else is eligible for, and this is an appropriation for veterans courts. I have two testifiers with me today. First is County Attorney Pete Orpik, and Mr. Chair, if I could allow him to testify.
Please introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm Pete Orpik, and I'm the Washington County Attorney, Mr. Chair. I'll make my comments very brief, although I do want to hit on two topics. One, the need for domestic abuse counseling and therapy for some of the veteran offenders we see, and the other one is overall for the Veterans Court. The one reason why I'm here on Veterans Court is because they work, they're cost-effective, and they do the right thing to the right person each and every time. I set up a quasi-Veterans Court because there wasn't any funding back in 2011. I've cycled 72 veterans through it, none of whom have committed additional or any other crimes, all of whom required a good deal of therapy, much of that picked up by the VA, except we did find a couple of holes, and those are in domestic abuse. These troops respond really well to the right and appropriate counseling, and it can be done in a very cost-effective manner. The basis for wanting to push this hard is the victims of these crimes invariably come to me and say, I want my partner or husband or spouse back the way they were before you ran them into the military in a number of tours. And they're the ones that are most supportive of this. So what happens is when we get them in the right programming with enough incentives, they don't reoffend. They're back with their families. They're becoming the productive citizens they were before they went in the service. But that requires a certain approach to it, just as veterans courts do. I'll be very brief. In 2008, the first veterans court was set up in Erie County, New York. It had great success. I learned as much as I could and tried to bring it here to Minnesota. Currently, we only have a few, but the success is profound. It's cost effective. The VA picks up a great number of these costs, and it's doing the right thing by getting these people who didn't go in the military. We need to be cautious about labeling them a criminal until after we've gotten them the help they need. And I'm not suggesting all veterans need that help. I'm not at all. But it just so happens that a number of studies have showed that about one-third of the returning veterans have some malady of either PTSD, traumatic brain injury, depression. And it just so happens that many of them try to self-treat it, which leads them into visiting with me in Veterans Court. So I thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, also thank you, Mr. Chair. Also with me is Molly Moon.
Oh, Peggy.
Peggy Moon, sorry.
Molly.
Sorry.
Molly will work. Thank you. And
welcome, committee.
Hello again.
Please introduce yourself officially.
Yes, my name is Peggy Moon, and I am the legislative chairman for the American Legion for the Department of Minnesota. I am a past department commander and an Air Force veteran from the Vietnam era. And please excuse me, I kind of feel like I'm sitting at the kids' table.
I thought we were going to get rid of that chair last meeting.
So I feel like my knees are up to my neck, but that's all right. I've had a chance to look over this bill, and we like it very, very much. I think it just fills in a lot of gaps that aren't in current law. Certainly, you know, under Section 1, to help them with funds for mental health counseling or treatment for those that fall through the gaps, especially if we can get this done closer to the veteran's home, this is something that's going to help a lot. The veteran's nursing home, as you know, we have a very, very big state, and we have a long waiting list at most of our veterans' homes for our veterans. Here again, anything that we can do to help. And in most cases, they want to be in their own community. That's what they know. They want to be near their family so that they can visit. So we certainly support that. Honor Guards, yeah, we need help, certainly at the post level and when we need help from the professionals. So that one's certainly there. And with homeless veterans, not only is this an important issue for those of us in the American Legion, it's our department commander's project this year, so we certainly want to support anything that we can do for homeless veterans. Veterans Domestic Abuse Prevention, mental health, substance abuse, and veterans courts all go hand in hand. And we've heard testimony here many times about how crucial those veterans courts have been at giving our veterans a second chance. So I don't see anything in this bill that we could not support. That's why I'm here, and I would urge your support. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? Representative Becker Flynn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hopefully, Representative Hillstrom, you can answer this. So I'm very supportive of the Section 6 about domestic abuse prevention programming that would be focused on veterans. As the last testifier noted, there are veterans live statewide, not just in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So I'm wondering, with this specifically going to the Domestic Abuse Project, is there a plan or is there already a mechanism to make sure this programming is available to veterans statewide?
Michael Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a really great question. I'm going to work on making certain that that is the case. We kind of looked at what we thought was already there, tried not to create new kinds of systems, and so if we don't have the language perfect on where that should go or how it should be administered, I'm happy to make that correction. Again, we just didn't want to create a new structure, a new system. We just wanted to capitalize on the dollars that we could get to enhance the program.
Okay, and then a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, just a follow-up to that, I just want to make sure that we're remembering our veterans who live in the suburbs as well. You know, we tend to talk about the urban and rural, and we don't, you know, when we don't have transit to get to St. Paul, that means that we got to make sure these programs are available to everybody. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hillstrom, I like your bill. Obviously, it does great things. I do have one question. In Section 2 in the tax credit, do we know how many people are on these waiting lists?
Representative Hillstrom.
Does anybody know? Do you know?
Looks like we have Mr. Johnson.
I'm going to phone a friend.
Mr. Johnson, don't hit your chin now when you sit down. So.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the State Department of Veterans Affairs. And with regards to the question, the current waiting list, we're talking about the active waiting list. The number varies between 800 and 850 for all five states' veteran homes. I hope that answers the question.
Representative Rosenthal? While you're sitting there, Mr. Johnson, I'm looking at the legislation. There's no dollar amount in mind for the homeless grants. What are we looking at there? Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, at this moment, there were no money. I left it blank because I want as much as possible. And this was, I think, a trick that I learned at Mindfin from Representative Davids to put in a bill when you want to say that you want money. We don't know what the budget forecast looks like yet. We don't know what budget targets are going to look like. I didn't want you to say that it was too high of a price tag. So my goal is to work with the committee chairs that have money to see if we can't increase the funding. So I would ask for as much as possible. And one of the questions I think we'll get asked is how much does each program need and what are the deficits? And we'll be working on collecting all of that information.
And maybe for Mr. Orpitt, the Veterans Court appropriation is part of the, is it part of the court's request? Representative Hillstrom?
For the first time, the courts actually did ask for specialty courts or treatment court money. Typically, out of the Judiciary Committee, we have been giving them right around $1 million for specialty courts in the last few years, sometimes $750,000, sometimes $1.5 million. And so I just want to make certain that veterans courts are part of the mix and that that everyone understands how important veterans courts are in addition to these other treatment courts.
And another question, how much in terms of tax cut would the Veterans Nursing Home credit be?
Mr. Chair, I believe that a fiscal note should probably be requested on how much that would be. It would ultimately be based on whoever actually does it. There's a list of, we just heard, 800 people that are on the list, but they're not all Minnesota residents. They wouldn't all opt to go to a private nursing home somewhere else while they're on the waiting list. So those would be hopefully questions we can get answered through the fiscal note process.
And I have one final question. Is there any estimate to the amount of this bill would add to the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Mr. Chair, I think that would thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that that would be whatever we fill in the blank.
Okay.
Because we are asking them to have additional dollars to provide these services. And Mr. Chair, I just want to say veterans are very important to our state. And at a time of budget surpluses, I want to make certain that they are part of the conversation, not just what the services are that we currently provide, but where our gaps are. And so everyone has a priority, but these are the priorities that I think we need to make certain that we continue to think about as we put together the entire budget.
And Representative Hillstrom, if you've been around this committee long enough, I think you know that this committee really feels that veterans is a big part of our state and our economy. And are there any other questions from the committee? Any other questions from the audience? Any other comments? Please come forward.
You going to sit on this
side? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please introduce yourself for the record.
And committee members, I'm Tom McLaughlin. I'm the legislative chairman for the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Minnesota. And I'm from Mankato, Minnesota, Blewett County, the 5th Judicial District, and I am a mentor currently in Veterans Court. And in our court now, I believe it's been standing up for over 3 years, and I don't have an exact number of people we've put through, but this is my third veteran that I've mentored, and it looks like this is going to be another successful mentor relationship. We have staff there. We had one staff person full-time other than from corrections, and that person was hired away by Waseca County to become a county service officer, which is a good thing. It shows the quality of the staff we had there in our court. But the funding in our particular situation has not allowed us to rehire a full-time staff person to monitor the veterans in the court, which includes spot checks, it includes UA tests, that kind of thing, 24 hours a day. So we are working with the fellow out of the jail, one of the jailers, the chief jailer, is doing an excellent job, but he's only allowed part-time. He's only allowed the ability to work part-time in the court. So I can testify that the funding is lacking because we really do need to have a full-time staff member there to run a court of this statute operation. So,
well, thank you for your testimony, and maybe you can answer this, or maybe Mr. Oakwood could answer this. How many out of the 87 counties? How many have veterans courts?
I've heard five.
I bet there's seven.
Mr. Chair, there are seven formal ones, but there are a number that don't really count.
Okay.
I would argue my veterans program, I didn't get any money for it, so I had to go around and ask for volunteer time from judges, probation agents, so we kind of cobbled it together. Right now, it drives fine, but I think it could be the gold standard, which I'd put at Ramsey or Hennepin counties. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Open. Are there any other questions? Any other additions from comments from the audience? Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Chair, members of the committee, my apologies. The 850 that I cited was current bed count. The waiting list is 1,000, and so I just want to get the records straight. It's closer to 1,000 than the 850 is the active bed count. So,
okay. Thank you. Thank you. With that, Any closing remarks, Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, again, I hope you'll consider supporting this proposal. I would like all of these items to be part of the discussion as we move forward about what it is that Minnesota can do for our veterans.
Okay. With that, I renew my motion that House File 728, as amended, be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. House File 728 will be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next bill is on the agenda is House File 79. Chair Davis, please come to the testifying table and your testifiers.
Yep.
Welcome to your committee, Chair Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 79 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Chair Davis, your bill is before us. Please tell us about your bill and present it and your speakers, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm very pleased today to have a contingent from Fillmore County with us here today to support House File 79, which is to fund a veterans home in Fillmore County. I have with me today to my left Kathy Enerson, who's the EDA director at Preston and Spring Valley and other cities in southeastern Minnesota. The veteran service officer, Jason Marquardt, a veteran. We have also three county commissioners, Commissioner Dwayne Bakke, who's sitting behind me, the former president of the AMC. We have Commissioner Mitch Lentz, Commissioner Gary Peterson's with us. We have Bill Roy, who's on the committee for Spring Valley, and also, I believe, has a graduate, a son that's a graduate of the Air Force Academy. In the Air Force. And we have Don Becker, who's a veteran and has a son currently serving the military. And we have two veterans from Preston, Ron Scable and Don Gildner are with us here today also. A little brief history on this issue. I've had this bill before us. It was an idea brought to me by a gentleman named Maynard LeFleur out of Rushford, Minnesota. And we visited about the need for a veteran's home in southeastern Minnesota. And as we go through the PowerPoint, I really want you to look at, well, I want you to look at all of them, but there's one that has a map of where, geographically, where the current locations are. And you'll see there's a great void in southeastern Minnesota of any veteran's home for our veterans. We've got the southwest covered, kind of the northwest, north central, west. Northeast and the metro area, but nothing in southeastern Minnesota. So take a close look in your packet on the PowerPoint presentation on the big gaping hole there is for veterans home services in southeastern Minnesota. So we're very excited to get this moving, and a little bit of history here. We've had this bill in before. Several communities in Fillmore County have shown interest. Like I said, started out with a gentleman from Rushford. I had inquiries from Chatfield, Harmony, Lanesboro, but it seems that the two communities that have really taken off here with an interest and are putting a great deal of effort forward are the communities of Spring Valley and Preston. And so you'll notice the bill language does not have a specific site. That will be determined through a number of sources, whether it be county commissioners, whether it be the Veterans Administration. So that's not in the bill. It says Fillmore County. And so I would like to again introduce Kathy Enerson to have a PowerPoint presentation and a few remarks from our Veteran Services Officer in Fillmore County, and then we certainly stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. I'm Kathy Enerson. I am the Economic Development Director in two rural communities in southeastern Minnesota, Preston and Spring Valley, and with me, combining to do the PowerPoint for you is
Jason Marquardt, Fillmore County Veteran Service Officer.
Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Please continue.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Detmer. In front of you, you have a packet of information. On the right or on the left-hand side of your packet, what you will see is information about how to go about actually bringing a veteran's home to the state of Minnesota. So some of you may be new, and thank you very much for serving on the Veterans Committee, and I wanted to thank those that are here. I'm very proud to be here today. And on that right side is facts, questions, what the federal application looks like, so that you get a little bit more familiar of the process. Our PowerPoint, it starts off with actually the front of your packet. On the right-hand side is the overview of our proposal for a 100-bed veterans home for skilled and memory care for this one-third of the state's veterans that are 65 and older. So if you want to take a look at the PowerPoint piece right here, and then it'll be above as well. At the very end of your packet, at the back side of it, on the right-hand side, is a demand study that shows needs and fill rate for Fillmore County. So, Jason, you want to start out?
All right. You know, the first slides in the presentation are representatives' bill. You have that before you. Currently, it asks for a $10 million bond for the up to 100-bed facility. If you page through, you get to the state benefits, which would be your fourth slide. And Kathy's actually going to cover the state benefits because she did all the work on that and the construction costs, and then I'll go over some more information on that. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State benefits, one of the things that we're looking at right now is that 2-to-1 federal investment. So given that the appropriation request is for $10 million, we're looking at a federal match of $20 million, two-thirds of the cost of the capital, one-time capital cost. Looking for state benefits is 180 jobs, 115 of which are full-time, 65 part-time. And according to the Minnesota Department of Veterans, we have 7% of the total state population of Minnesota is veterans, and we can bring that skilled services and memory care to 15 of southeastern Minnesota counties and 40 cities. There's a non-state local contributions that are in excess of $1.5 million. Land would be donated for a veterans home in Fillmore County, needs assessments, economic, and site feasibility studies as well. So as I continue on to the construction cost, Horty Elving and Associates is very familiar. They are out of Minneapolis. They're familiar with construction of state veterans homes. And what they have provided for all of us is an estimate, a cost estimate, for a 100-bed facility with both additional information for the memory care cottages.
Mr. Chair, I'll look at or talk through these slides.
Okay, go ahead.
The first slide that you'll see next, and it's up on the screen, is the demand study. It shows the four veterans homes, which is Minneapolis, Fergus Falls, Laverne, and Silver Bay. There is Hastings as a veterans home, but Hastings is a domiciliary, so it's not a long-term skilled care facility. You can see every one of them right now is at 100%, unless something changed today where somebody moved out, but they're currently running at 100%, and as Mr. Ben Johnson said, there's 1,000 veterans on the waiting list currently. So it shows the need right there all over the state, and then you look at the map, and within a 90-mile radius of the city of Preston, which is the Fillmore County seat, there is no veterans home within 130 miles. So,
and I probably this, I'm sure Mr. Johnson is listening here, maybe later as we get into the testimony here, that 1,000, where are the majority of those veterans located? We need to talk about that too.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, the next slide, if we go to that ends the slide on the current demand. It is so high. The next one just shows Minnesota by age on the first pie chart. And currently 25% of Minnesota veterans are 75 and older. And you can see how it breaks down from there. And then the next slide is also gender. We have approximately 343,000 male veterans in the state of Minnesota and 26,000 female veterans. So we do have a high concentration within the state of Minnesota just by numbers of veterans. And even if they are my age, they are going to get older. They're going to have the need for this care. We go to the next slide, and that's going to show the demand on a tiered system that the demand study shows. They took three areas within southeastern Minnesota and made them into tiers. If you actually hold your paper, you can see both. So you can see both the map and the chart. It's a little easier. Sorry for that confusion. But as of 2017, down in this 15-county area, we could put 224 people in a 100-bed facility this year. Go out to 2040, there's still 111 people just by the numbers that could go into this facility. So a 100-bed facility is still going to be less than what we need even in southeastern Minnesota. Go to the next slide, which is the regional overview. The study was performed fall of last year, so 2016. The maximum occupancy rate for 1 year with 6 months contingency to allow for training. What that means is it's going to take a year and a half to totally fill this facility by what our feasibility study shows, because they will, most nursing facilities open up in sections. So we're going to want to not open it up right away and have the floodgates. We're going to want to open it up in small sections to make sure that we have the staffing, we have everything to meet that veterans need or that veteran spouses need that's in the facility. As we stated, 33% of Minnesota veterans live within 90 minutes of this facility. And 30% within 70 miles. So only 3% are from outside that 70, so 20-mile difference there. The average or the smallest waiting list on a current veterans home is 3 months. So me as a county veteran service officer, it's going to take me 3 months to get a veteran into a current facility unless there's a whole lot of luck going in the veteran's favor. You have some facilities that have a year-long waiting list, some 6 months, but the minimum is going to be 3 months. And it's going to be 3 years to get a spouse into that same facility. So regionally, we had that tiered system that we showed you earlier, and that's going to show just the catchment area with each tier. So tier one, 30% of the veterans are going to come from there, 20% are going to come from tier two, and 10% from that third tier. Travel distance, like we said, is 90 miles or less for the veteran and their family. Because as you heard in that last bill that was introduced, keeping the veteran close to home is a great deal. We have veterans that I have to currently send up to Silver Bay, Fergus Falls, Laverne, because that's the availability. Now, for family members to drive them distances gets taxing even on the family members. Or if you have a community spouse, it's really taxing on that community spouse to drive 4 hours out to Laverne, 6 hours up to Silver Bay to go see their loved one.
Mr. Markport.
Yes, sir.
About those numbers you're talking about, does that include possible veteran spouses?
Yes. I'll have Kathy answer that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that you can look back before the map, the tiered map, is that you'll see the catchment area includes Tier 1 at a 30% capture rate, 65 and older, Tier 2, Tier 3, and then it does go down and show you that there is 10% additional demand for the spouses. And then Pat, that did our need study, also included that 20% of additional people will come outside of the first three tiers. So I hope that answers your question, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Please proceed.
So on the next slide, there's a pie chart. One of the things that's important for you to realize with this project is that demand is for the veterans that are 65 years and older. So when we're discussing this, we're talking about the one-third of the state's veterans that are 65 and older. We want to make that point clear that that is why there's a need for a 100-bed facility all the way through 2040. There is that minimum waiting list of 3 months. However, the average waiting list is 10. There's almost 1,900 veterans currently on the four facilities waiting lists. So there's quite a high concentration of veterans and their spouses. Why Fillmore County? The map is one of the things that I think was most significant for you to view, as Representative Greg Davids pointed out. But we're also doing a few other things, the free land. There's donations and supporting communities. As was mentioned, it's the nearest facility is Minneapolis. It's 138 miles away. Minneapolis' waiting list is 550 persons with a nine-month waiting list for the veterans, 2 to 3 years for their spouses. So the median wait time for the state is 10 months. Right now, Fillmore County can serve over 24,000 veterans age 65 and older, and there'll be over $1.5 million offered from Fillmore County and the surrounding communities to assist with a state veterans home. The next slide refers to the economic benefits. Again, why is it a smart economic investment? It's that 2-to-1 ratio where $20 million comes in federal funding, where $10 million comes from the state investment. There is additional per diem that comes into the state. It's $103 currently per veteran that will come in for state spending for the jobs. I think both the drive and the visitor traffic, for those of you that have been down to Fillmore County, it's a very peaceful, it's a wonderful place for people to have end-of-life experience, and we're also right next to the cemetery that you all put in Preston and Fillmore County. So a couple of other things, if you break this right down specifically per veteran that could use this over the 23 years, the $10 million investment, it's $2,175 that you'd be investing per veteran and creating 180 new health care jobs in southeast Minnesota. So may I go in conclusion, sir?
Please go right okay. To the end.
All right. Thank you, sir. So the next steps, for those of you that maybe are new to this, we have gotten quite a bit of advice from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. How do you go about creating a home in your community, in your part of the state? The next step is to put the foot into the game, and that's where the legislators come in. An appropriation for the $10 million bond and the authorization from the governor in writing to create the state agency to act upon the state. Once that happens, the application that's filled out by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs goes into a priority list for the federal queue. And so that would be the ultimate end for this proposal, is to create a home in Fillmore County for our veterans. We've shown the need and the fill rate, but then we need your help at this point to have an appropriation so that we can get on that federal queue. Thank you, sir.
And we have Chair Davids. Did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for this committee, it's not so much about the money. The $10 million was filled in. In meeting with the Department of Veteran Affairs, that may be a little light, but that's not for today. Today is about policy and to prove the need for veterans' home in southeastern Minnesota. And Fillmore County has stepped up to the plate. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has been wonderful to work with, but they cannot do anything until we do something. It's all based upon the legislature acting before they can act. They've been very helpful as a resource, and we appreciate that. And as I said earlier, we have with us today County Commissioner Dwayne Bakke, who's here as a resource if there's questions that you have about the county's perspective. And just a little history there, Fillmore County has a history of stepping up to the plate to help our veterans. You are well aware of what we've done in Fillmore County, and a lot of that was, I carried the legislation for that, but if it had not been for the county board, nothing would have happened. And the county board worked so well with the city, with the state, with the federal government to get that job done. It would not have happened without Fillmore County stepping up to get that job done. And again, I would invite anyone, if you're in southeastern Minnesota coming through Preston, give me a call. We'll go up to Branding Iron or the bowling alley, have some lunch, and then we'll I'll give you a personal tour. It's an amazing facility that the state of Minnesota has put in there. And I give a lot of credit to that Veterans Cemetery, too. Congressman Walz, Governor Dayton stepped up when we had a few glitches there and provided leadership to get that facility built. And so the county board has a history in Fillmore County of supporting our veterans, and they wish to continue that work. So with that, you know, I would just say that we need to serve those who have served us, and Fillmore County's ready to do that. So we would stand for questions.
Well, just a couple comments first before we have a couple questions here. But, you know, I've been able to sit through committee meetings on different communities that come forward, you know, Bemidji, Montevideo, and all communities, in this case a county, have produced some outstanding pieces of work here, and they've done their groundwork, what the needs are, and they've done some research that it's really important. So this booklet you got really is well done, and as well as other communities have done the same thing. Becca Flynn, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's my understanding there's a limited number, there's a federal cap on the number of beds that we can have overall in the state, correct? So actually, Chair, you mentioned what I was just about to point out, because when I look at this map, I'm also seeing, you know, a big gap here, Grand Rapids, Bemidji, Thief River Falls. And so I'm curious, and maybe Vice Chair Bliss knows, are there any current proposals for these other communities that maybe are looking to build similar facilities?
Vice Chair Bliss.
Yeah, thanks for that opening. We do have a bill that's been dropped for a veterans home in the Bemidji area as well as Montevideo.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to clarify, so I'm sure who's asking for what. Thank you.
And as Chair Davis said, it's going to be up to the legislature to make a decision, and we're allowed so many beds. Are you aware, has it been stated already in the testimony of how many beds that the state of Minnesota is allocated by the federal government, by the VA?
Mr. Chairman, 1,058.
That's right. And currently we have nine, what's our number of beds? I know.
Mr. Chairman, 814.
814, so there we go. Yes, Representative Becker.
Yeah, just wanted to point out that. And it's not that I don't support the idea of increasing the beds. It, clearly there is a need when you look at these wait lists. Was just curious, and so thanks for asking that question.
We've got Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative David Thorpe, the testifiers. There's been a couple of numbers put off during Representative Hillstrom's bill that said there were 1,000 people on the waiting list, and I see here there's 1,800. Do we know what the difference is?
Go ahead, answer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look back into the health needs study that was done in 2016, and you look to the chart that you first saw with the waiting list per facility, she actually called and contacted each one of the different facilities. And so the occupancy, if you look at that particular slide, or if you were to look at your map here, you will see that the number of beds is listed, the 100% occupancy currently is listed, as well as the number of folks on the waiting list. And 550 in Minneapolis, 580 in Fergus Falls, Laverne, and Silver Bay. And there's two types of waiting lists. There's active and inactive waiting lists. And so that's probably why you are hearing the two numbers, active versus active and inactive lists, sir.
Dr. Rosenbaum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain the difference between active and inactive?
Mrs. Anderson?
Give me just a second to go to the needs study. Active, she noted, was the folks that have exhausted their ability to have care within their home and are ready to be actually admitted into a VA home. Then inactive is stated as where people have signed up to be on the home but aren't quite ready to go into the home yet.
Okay. Robert Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davis, thank you for doing this bill. I just want to make clear that it's for 100 beds, not 140 as stated on the in the packet.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rosenthal, this is proposals for 100 beds.
Okay. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the numbers of the veterans on the wait list, too, I was just curious, do you have an idea of how many veterans from this region is that are currently in the other location, and if we do get this project going forward, how many beds will be freed up in the other locations?
Yes, Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Marquardt. Representative, currently we don't know how many people have went to other facilities. I know I've personally put three in there in the 5 years I've been CBSO. And I can't say if they'll come back to this facility because they may be enjoying that facility, they may like being around those people, but they also may have passed away and we don't know, because that's a reality of a long-term care facility like this, that people do pass away and we don't always get that notification.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the committee? Other questions from the audience? Okay. Well done, Chair Davids. And with that, Chair Davids, closing remarks.
Yes, I would just like to thank you for your a very good time here as far as giving us good time to go over this very important proposal. And so I'd renew my motion that this House File 79 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Chair Davids renews his motion that House File 79 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And just a reminder, there's other attractions in Fillmore County, too. Chair Davids.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you.
The bill on the docket here is House File 1059. Representative Howe. And Representative Howe, welcome to the committee. I'll move House File 1059 before the committee and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Howe, your bill is before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little shocked it's going to taxes. I thought it would go to government ops, but because it does not change any taxes, but I'll work that out later.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1059, what it does is this right now, a veteran that has a disability over 70% but less than 100 is eligible for a $150,000 tax exemption on his property tax, on their value of their property taxes. And someone that's a veteran with a disability at 100% gets a $300,000 property tax exemption on the value. All this, and what I think is curious, is they have to apply for that annually. And so I was having a meeting with the Stearns County, and actually they brought it up that they say this causes a lot of issue for the Stearns County folks, so as far as the county people, because they, the way they notify them is they send them a letter that says, hey, you need to come in and apply your property tax exemption. And then they follow that up with those folks that don't respond with the first one, they send them another letter. And the folks that don't respond to that letter get a phone call. So it takes up a lot of staff time to work this. And then when they get all that in, what they do is they take that information and send it to the, they send it to the county veteran service officer who verifies the list. They said there's no real need for that annual application anymore unless there's a change in the property or a change in the marital status. So I know it's a hassle for the veterans to do it every year. It's a hassle for the folks at the county to do it every year. All this does is get rid of the annual application. They have to initially apply yet, and then they just take the list and verify it with the CVSO. CVSO verifies the amount of disability, and it's done. There's no more annual application. I know that I've checked with the Association of Minnesota Counties. They don't have a problem with it, so I will stand for questions. I have no testifiers.
Any questions from the committee? Questions from the audience? Or
I have a quick question.
Leslie Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe. In the language in the bill, there seems to be some things that could be worked on to make it a little bit tighter as to exclusions and what happens during the periods when the spouse may be surviving. And
Rosenthal, could you be a little more specific?
It just seems to me the bill's a little bit loose, and could you work to tighten up the language going forward?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rosenthal. If there's I know we took the verbiage out of the current language of the law, but if there's a way to tighten it up, I will definitely accept that and work on to tighten that up if there's a way to do that.
And we have somebody in the audience. Mr. Tisdall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Randy Tisdall, State Adjutant to Minnesota's American Legions. Great bill. The only question that I would have is there something in there that addresses, as we heard earlier, individuals with ratings that aren't total and permanent have future exams? Could be out to 5 years for a future exam. What about the instance of a 70 percenter that has a future exam who's gotten better and is reduced to a lower percentage?
Reverend Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and excellent question. What that does is when the county sends that over to the county veteran service officer, they check the VA records. If it's reduced, boom, it stops the it stops their exemption. So they will not get the.
Sure.
Reverend Howe, could you explain that a little more for the committee? I know we have some new people on the committee.
So, and that is the reason, Mr. Chair, that they used to require an annual application is because the veteran service officer didn't have that access by the computer into the veteran's disability rating. Now they have that, so as that comes over from the county, the veteran service officer can look into the veteran's disability information and verify the disability rating of that veteran, and if it's below 70, that nullifies their application, that annual exemption, and it's taken care of. That's why, with the technology increases that we've had today, we don't need that annual application any longer.
Mr. Tisdall.
Committee author, I think that's great. That was my only concern, is that there's still a verification being done between the county and the county veteran service officer to assure that rating is still at 70 or higher. And also those that go to 100 to say, hey, by the way, we need to bump them to the $300,000 exemption.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And Mr. Marquardt, you raised your hand. Please come back to the table. And please reintroduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jason Marquardt. Along with being the Fillmore County Veteran Service Officer, I am also the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. And the thing I ask about this bill is our offices are taxed. We don't have all the staff in the world to do this. My office is me. I take care of 1,500 veterans. Yes, I get a list, but how is there a plan for me to take that 5 days to look up that information? Or not all these veterans have a power of attorney with one of the service organizations that give me access. Is there a plan in place for that?
Reverend Howe.
You know, Mr. Chair, I guess we'll have to look at that, but in Stearns County, the county that I brought this from, and they didn't bring that issue up. It seemed to be pretty transparent that if they are applying for this, it's that the county veteran service officer has that flexibility and that access. So it's the first I heard of it. We can work on that to see where the bugs are in that.
And Mr. Marquardt, you said you're the president of the county service officers in the state of Minnesota.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I would maybe have you contact my legislative assistant here and maybe come back and share with the committee here on exactly the role of the county service officers. So
I would be more than happy to, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Tom Diamond. Ken, I would like to commend the work in this bill, but I would also like to mention some of the comments that have come before. We now have, I think, 6 bills on this very subject floating in various different parts that are on, and they're all very good pieces. And they all seem to work together, but how they get put together, I think, is going to be a real important issue going forward. And so whether MDBA or somebody could facilitate with the interested parties to have a conversation, so at least everybody understands how all these parts might possibly go together. It would be helpful.
Thank you. And I can assure you that the department, MDBA, will be very involved in all of these pieces of legislation that comes across. If you go to their website has a great display of all the different bills that have been that have House file numbers. And it also tells you where they're at and so forth. So for those that haven't checked that website, they've really improved it a lot, a lot. And it's very well. In fact, to my own office, when we want to know what bills are, we can just go right to that website MDBA put on. So it's a great addition. So Mr. Johnson, thank you for. I'm sure you had something to do with that. But
thanks to the committee chair and the committee members for all the interest in this particular provision. Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howe, I do like your bill. And I'll just point out the spot on line 2.2 through 2.4, where it says the spouse must reapply if there's a change in the spouse's marital status, ownership of the property, or use of the property. They're reapplying for something that they would not be eligible for. That's the way I read the bill.
Representative Howe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal, actually they have to notify, which means they've changed. But that's what it's. If it needs to be worked on, I'll take a second look at that. But that's what it's meant to do.
Are there any other questions or comments? With that, Dr. Howe, any closing remarks?
No, Mr. Chair. If I'll go back and meet with the county veteran service officers, make sure that's. A seamless piece on that notification, and take a look at lines 2.2 to 2.4 to make sure that that's all buttoned up before we get to the next committee.
With that, then the chair removes the motion that House File 1059 be re-referred to Taxes Committee. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1059 is referred to taxes. And the next bill up is my bill. So, Vice Chair Bliss, the gavel is yours. I got the good chair.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill before the committee and have it be re-referred to State Government Finance Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 755 and be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance.
Chair Detmer, your bill is before us. Please tell us about your bill.
Very simple. This bill appropriates $250,000 from bond proceeds from the Commissioner Administration for the design and construction of a commemorative memorial at the Capitol area honor all Minnesota Medal of Honor recipients. If you've been over to the Veterans building, you've probably seen that fountain there that hasn't been working for several years. And that is going to be the location. We had a groundbreaking ceremony there this fall, and that is where this memorial is going to be built for the Medal of Honor recipients from Minnesota. And I have two testifiers here, and Tiffany Kobleski, she is the chief, she was chief of staff of the Medal of Honor convention, and she also works with this committee to raise funds for the Medal of Honor memorial. And also Mr. Mandel, Executive Secretary for the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board. So,
please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Tiffany Kobleski, and I am the co-chairwoman of the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial.
Paul Mandel, Executive Secretary for the Capital Area Planning Board.
Please proceed.
Thank you. This afternoon, I was asked to preface our conversation with how I became involved with the memorial. And for those that don't know, I was the chief of staff for the Medal of Honor Convention Twin Cities. 2 years ago, the board asked me to become the chief of staff, and our team was able to bring 42 Medal of Honor recipients to the Twin Cities October 3rd through the 9th of 2016. In the process, we were able to have very successful events leading up to the convention and then the week-long convention itself. I personally oversaw the CDP program, which is the Character Development Program. This is brought to you by the Medal of Honor recipients themselves. They themselves are within more of a well-seasoned age, and they needed something that would preserve their legacy. So they created the Character Development Program. This is a curriculum that is written and taught by teachers. It is a full curriculum that stands on itself. It can fit into civics, government, writing classes, English classes, anything that you want. It's a curriculum, but it's also more or less a resource. It doesn't have to stand on its own. It can be used implementary between other curriculums that schools already have. I myself, first and foremost, am a mother. I have a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I really do believe in character education. I think character education is important at every age, specifically the younger ages. So within the convention, we were able to pass legislation within the state of Minnesota to have the Character Development Program be the state of Minnesota's character education bill. This is a free resource. It doesn't cost schools or teachers anything. The Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation pays for the trainings, pays for all of the curriculum materials, and it has been a curriculum that has been used across the country. So
once I became kind of the, I was the lead for the CDP within the convention, I'm proudly here telling you that we had 14 simultaneous school visits during the week of the convention. We had 5 teacher trainings, and we developed an elementary CDP for the country that we launched the week of the convention. So now K through 12 are able to be taught the 6 characteristics of the Medal of Honor, which are courage, commitment, citizenship, sacrifice, integrity, and patriotism. Those 6 characteristics are something that every person and child can exude on a daily basis. So once I was working on the convention, I was asked to come and testify on the CAP board because I'm also joined here today with the chairman of the memorial, John Kramer, and several members from the honorary committee ourselves, or committee here too. John Kramer came and approached me and wanted to know if we could tie the CDP in with the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial. And I said, absolutely. This ties everything in with our youth as it does with our recipients. So I went and I presented in front of the Madam Chair and the Executive Committee, along with Commissioner Shillitoe. Commissioner Shillitoe presented to the CAP board the reason why he thought that we should have a Medal of Honor Memorial. He himself has a personal friend that he lost in battle that received the award posthumously. To date, we have a book here that has 72 Medal of Honor recipients that are from the state of Minnesota. The criteria, you might hear different numbers. There's different criteria on how you, acknowledges if they are a medal recipient or not. We're going to go with the larger number because we want as many as we can because they're the most precious gems within our communities and our country. So Commissioner Shillitoe presented to the CAP board of why he thought that we should have a Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial, and some of the pushback that came was that we have enough veteran memorials on our Capitol Mall, which is when then I came up and I said, this is the first memorial that is a multi-generational memorial that is taking our nation's greatest heroes and connecting their 6 characteristics down with my 4-year-old child and anyone else, of course. And so Madam Chair and the members of the CAP board came around and they said, Ms. Kovaleski, your testimony has proved well and we thank you for it and it has changed our minds. Keep in mind that this memorial, and Mr. Mandel will talk more about the memorial location and the problems that we have had over the last 2 decades with the memorial, but it itself is placed in a beautiful location for a veteran memorial underneath the Veteran Services Building. So now I was asked by the by John Kramer, the chairman of the memorial, to also testify here, like I am today, to have the memorial passed in legislation after the CAP board agreed to it. Happily, of course, I came and it was passed, and now we're working on, working towards the selection of what the memorial would look like. I was blessed to be asked to be a part of that jury selection also, and I was on it with Representative Detmer and with Commissioner Shillitoe and a couple of other phenomenal people, and I was asked to speak beforehand because this memorial, again, is not just for veterans or for Medal of Honor recipients. It's also for families and for it to be multi-generational. So I went up and I said, this is we want a water feature, but we don't want a pond that we're going to be pulling our children out of, and we don't want a pond that's going to be freezing or cracking in the wintertime. And so there was different elements to this memorial that made it very pleasant for everyone to come to, specifically any age. So being part of the jury selection was a dream come true, and we were able to select the winning design. All of you have it in front of you right here. This is what the proposed memorial will look like. We are taking the Fountain of Youth, which is a key component here. Millie
who is the fountain of youth, has been a broken pond for over 20 years, and she is a beautiful statue that represents the youth of our state. Millie then is surrounded by the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial encompassing her and creating a multi-generational memorial. So after I spoke, we were able to then, simultaneously, of course, the convention is coming and the planning is going on, and this is all kind of circulating, so I hope that you're staying with this sequence of events with me. So the convention came to the Twin Cities, and we were able to have the groundbreaking ceremony on October 3rd of 2016, in which we were to have Minnesota honor flights, the World War II board, have not one but two flyovers. We were able to have an official party with General Nash and Commissioner Shelleteau, Medal of Honor recipient, the President of the Society, Tom Kelly, John Kramer, myself, and many members of our veteran organizations were there, and it was a phenomenal, successful event. Since then, we have been able to start the process of getting the memorial taking off in the right direction, which is going to include funds, which is why I'm sitting here with you today. Within the packet here, this is our sponsorship packet. So this can show you kind of a brief description of everything that I've talked about. But the first page I want to show you is the honorary board. We have the governor's support right now. We have Senator Al Franken, Congressman Tom Emmer. Three Medal of Honor recipients are sitting on our board, and the list goes down. We're currently working on other ones also. Last week, we were able to sit down with a potential title sponsor who is very much interested in becoming our title sponsor at $250,000, which would match the state funds that we're requesting. Our board is put together. We have a synopsis of the CDP in this, the location. My daughter and I went to the Women's March. Here's a picture from my iPhone, believe it or not, of what a crowd looks like behind this memorial and of how prominent this is on our Capitol Mall. Moving on, this is the groundbreaking ceremony that you can see, where we had a shovel ceremony, and we're very excited. If we were able to receive the appropriation of $250,000 from the state here today, along with our title sponsorship and a few other, we're hopeful that we will be able to accomplish this fundraising process in, I don't want to say it aloud, but a year is our goal. And then between that and the construction process would be one other year. So in best case scenario, in 2 years, we would have a beautiful multi-generational memorial sitting under the Veterans Services Building for everyone to enjoy.
And Mr. Chair, and it would be remiss not to at least have Mr. Kramer just raise his hand up there, because he was the first gentleman that came into my office regarding this project, the Medal of Honor project from Stillwater, Minnesota, and he brought this information to me, and I knew right away that he had the ability to get things done, and quiet spoken, but thank you, Mr. Kramer, for being here today. And we have Mr. Paul Mandel from the CAP Board.
Excuse me, Representative Lesh has a question.
Yes. Oh, well, I was going to thank Mr. Chair and wait to the end, but my question was, who's Millie?
You should talk about
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh.
Mr. Mandrell.
Millie is actually, as it turns out, back in 97 when Senator Merriam was shepherding through the restoration of the statue, everyone had always known this as Millie. And it turns out that Millie was the favorite model for the designer. Two of the designer's sons were there, and they were the ones that we called. Well, Millie used to be a model, and she actually was on the Capitol grounds that year with her grandkids and was saying, I modeled for that statue. The grandkids were quite surprised. But at any rate, that's how it effectively became known as Millie, but it is actually titled The Promise of You.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mandel. So that was, am I understanding, that was the old statue was there?
It's and then, one and the same.
Okay, we're putting it back with the surrounded store. Okay, I get it. And my second point was, and I went to the groundbreaking, which was fantastic. It was really well done. It was amazing to see all those Medal of Honor winners. I think I was the only legislator there other than the two folks who spearheaded it, Senator Anderson and Representative Detmer. By the way, your picture on their board here, Representative Detmer, I don't know how old you were in that picture, but that's probably the one you gave them.
But, Mr. Chair, you can see what 10 years in the legislature will do to you.
If I had hair, I would look forward to that. So,
okay. The only other thing I would add is that it was a great program, but I think he ended up acknowledging everybody there with the exception of Representative Detmer and Senator Anderson, who were sitting down there. So just, you know, lesson learned on that, but they put in a ton of work on this, so. All right. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mandel, do you want to continue?
Sure, Mr. Chair. You have the single page here, which is a photo of the design board that won the design competition. We run these design competitions all the time for memorials, and actually some we used to for buildings, too, when they go through the design competition process. In the foreground, slightly to the left of center on the lower bottom of the page, is actually a photo of a calendar page I had from over a decade ago that was taken of the pool with the promise of youth. You can see the petals on the far right of it. That was a nighttime photo of the Capitol when the pool was still working and it was filled with water. One of the advantages of the new design, if you look at some of the other illustrations, is they use a polished granite surface to bring what we call zero gravity or zero depth pool. So instead of having a water base where during the winter and it's drained, it looks like a concrete flat nothing and collects leaves and dust and everything else. And when it's wet and filled with water, it is a safety hazard for kids who are left unattended by their parents who might wander into the pool. This is what we call a zero depth. So the water would spill out over a polished granite surface down the sides into stones that are actually supposed to be from Lake Superior, and then recirculate. So the most that happens, if you put your finger in the path of the water, it goes down about an inch and interrupts the flow of the water. But there is no repository for the water, so it takes away all the hazards and all the ugliness of off-season water and pools. In addition, it keeps the statue in the location it is. It repairs a fountain that the state has been unable to repair and fix for the past 10 or 12, 15 years, and then adds in the foreground elements of elevated landscaping with bronze walls that then capture some of the six characteristics as well as some of the symbols, associated with Medal of Honor, and then tells some of the story. Also makes it handicap accessible so that someone in a wheelchair can get right up to the water feature and dip their hand in just like anyone else. Then add some fall color and seasonal color. It would be open year-round, obviously. With that, I'd stand with any questions. But I will tell you that with the exception of one of the memorials in the Capitol grounds, every single one of those memorials has been built with state assistance, usually $250,000, $300,000, that and then encourages private matches. And this one is going to be about $750,000, so it's one of the larger projects we've had on the mall.
Thank you, Mr. Mandel. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Detmer and testifiers. You know, on a beautiful spring day like this, I often find myself walking around the Capitol grounds where there are many, many beautiful memorials, and I look forward to being able to see this one. Thank you.
And would you like to testify, sir?
Come on down.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Chuck Jones, and I'm the past Department Commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart and currently the Adjutant for the Department of Minnesota. I don't know, I was involved a little bit here with the past celebration that they had here. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if any of you people here have met anybody that has a Medal of Honor. But during this year convention, it was my honor to meet my replacement in Vietnam. And I had three Purple Hearts, and he replaced me, and he ended up with a Medal of Honor. So at this thing, it was really great not only to come across him, but all the other neat guys that came into the city that have Medal of Honors. And if ever you ever get a chance to do anything for the Medal of Honor, I would say do whatever they're begging for, because it's a treat. And hopefully, maybe in a few more years, we may be lucky enough to get these guys back again. But the stories they had, and you know, just going around to the different festivities that they had in the town here, was simply amazing. They're all down-to-earth people, them and their wives, and think about them just like it was one of your kids or your grandfather. You know, so I say wholeheartedly go with this year that the Tiffany here is going with for the Medal of Honor. It was really a treat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any other testifiers? Seeing none, Chair Detmer, would you like to have closing remarks?
Just closing remarks. I think over the past several years now, the state of Minnesota has done a lot of work to make Minnesota a very friendly place for our veterans. And I really believe that this is just another step that, as I mentioned before to the different veterans groups, is that if we speak with one voice, a lot of things will get done. And I think there's another example of people coming together, speaking with one voice, and bringing something that generations to come, will, especially our youth, will be able to come onto the Capitol grounds and with all the other memorials that we have here. This is just one more that we can really bring into to our character development for our young people. So with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 755 be re-referred to the Committee of State Government Finance.
Chair Detmer renews the motion that the House File 755 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and House File 755 is referred to State Government Finance. The next item on the agenda is a presentation by the United Veterans Legislative Council. Sit down, please. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm the current chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. We're here today to give you a little bit of a brief. Most of you, if you've been down here at the Capitol for any period of time, have probably seen me too many times already, but I'm here for veterans. Our organization was first founded way back in 1965. Back while I was still serving in the Marine Corps. And it's progressed all the way up through today. Our leadership is elected every 2 years instead of every 1 year. And myself being the chairman and my first vice overlap each other. I'm elected on the even years. The first vice is elected on the odd years. So we always have that knowledge going forward. We never have a gap of, hey, new guy, what's going on? What's happening at the Capitol? We keep that going all the way through. You've heard a lot of times in the last couple of committee meetings that this bill is being tweaked. It's being tweaked. That's because a lot of the bills that started out 10, 15 years ago were good bills, but due to technology and other reasons, bills needed to be tweaked. There was a little bit missing here and there. And that's what we come forward. We come forward and say, hey, this doesn't quite cover everybody. And it's an initial intent. It was to cover this, but due to technology or whatever, some people fell through the cracks. So we need to retweak that. Whether it be the widow and widowers, tweaking that bill to make sure it covers everybody. The new bill has a 2-year backup to cover folks that got missed.
There's many other bills that I could point out all the way down the line. You all have the sheet in your packet, and if you look at that, those are the speakers at each and every one of our committee or our council meetings that we have once a month. The first Wednesday of every month at 9:30, we meet across from the VA in Building 9. And as you can see, it's broken down into three sections. That's so that each group could come together, whether it be the state agencies, the VA, or the federal agencies. Each group gets rotated. So this in February, it was the state agencies and the Minnesota Veterans Agencies up first on the list. The next month, it'll be the federal agencies will be the first. The month after that, it'll be the federal representatives. So our council has access not only to all of you here in the state, but we also talk with the federal people every month or their assistants. I have with me here today Mr. Kaiser, who is our first vice. Get my last note here. I had one other note that I wanted to make sure I hit and didn't forget about it. We have had 14 different chairmen since it started back in 1965. And for the ladies on the committee, we've had two ladies that were chairman of the council over the years. So it's not just been males all the way through like some people think that when they think of veterans back in the day. Mr. Kaiser,
go ahead and introduce yourself. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I'm a Vietnam veteran like Ralph. We're combat disabled guys, and we are here to support veterans and all the different entities. We support the United Veterans Council, obviously, and the Commander's Task Force and the County Veterans Service Officers. We've got to parallel things together, so we're one voice. Yes, each particular organization is going to have different attitude about certain bills, but we want to get together to do the right things. One of our biggest positive things is that last year the changing of the pension for veterans, they helped veterans get back into the state of Minnesota. But prior to that, I'm also the vice chairman with Chairman Deppner for the Military Action Group, and it's a grassroots organization that I've been involved with since Representative
Severson
was here for over 10 years ago. And we've put together things over the years trying to make Minnesota more veteran and veteran business friendly. Part of the business of veterans is that they weren't certified by the state of Minnesota. Women and minorities were targeted businesses, but the state administration didn't vet veterans themselves unless they had a federal certification, which is tedious to get, as a matter of fact. And so just in the last year with dealing with Representative Detmer and Senator Anderson on the Senate side, we're able to work together with the Department of Admin, and so now you can be certified as a veteran-owned business. They have the same qualifications as women, minorities, on the financial side, and 51% ownership of the organization. And that also lets them get into more targeted business programs that the state of Minnesota has and on the federal level. Also, because of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Authority and the Viking Stadium, veterans were left out. We had not had that certification yet. And Ralph and I and others, and actually the General Nash and others, put a big stink about that. So we actually were asked by the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Authority to be part of the equity program. And although we didn't get into the contract that was written late at night, we did get a handshake from Morton Construction Company that they would try to give us 10% of the veteran contracts and probably 9% of the veterans who are working there. Well, it was better than a poke in the eye, but we got 1.5% of that $1 billion,
of programs with contractors, and 4% of the veteran workers. Until the Department of Administration came through and then certified who's a veteran-owned business with a program that is both quasi-state and financed by the community, we're able to get more veterans now into many other of the processes. So we're still on the equity committee with the Vikings program, with their new programs, and we're working diligently with with the MnDOT, where they can have more targeted businesses get contracts with the state of Minnesota. The problem is that we're not getting enough veteran-owned businesses to go over to the state of Minnesota and get the certification that they need to have to get more state and federal projects. So that's a task that we have to do, and I think with working with the equity program, with the Department of Administration and the contracts, and MnDOT, this next year, if the programs come with the federal programs that are going to be coming up, this infrastructures, that more veterans are going to be able to be involved with projects and veteran-owned businesses. So it's a positive program that we're very excited about, and I'm pleased to be involved with this. Also, I do the honor flights in the state of Minnesota. Our particular group is the one of five that we're doing it, and I get to meet all these World War II and Korea veterans, and some of them have been employees of the state of Minnesota, and they're talking about trying to get more veteran-owned businesses involved with it. So that's been a real positive endearment to my life. I really want to say one last thing is that I really endorse the Medal of Honor program here with this memorial. Doug Hagen, who was a good friend of Commissioner Shelato, and me, he was a college classmate of mine at NDSU, and he sacrificed his life in Vietnam for his men, and 14 went in, 7 went out, and he sacrificed his life to save them. It's an honor to have his name. He's on the wall in Arlington, and he needs to be here designated as a true hero here in Minnesota with this new memorial that you're doing. We also were able to participate in that memorial. We put together Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, that I'm executive director of. We put together that flyover, and that was a great day. So yes. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Kaiser, yes, it was a great event that day, and I really appreciate the work that you both do for the veterans of Minnesota. And I know we got the Marine Corps ready to move in here, so we need
but
to
I
just...
I am a Marine, Mr. T.
Yes. Please, just a final statement, and then we have one more testifier.
I just wanted to point out that we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We currently have about 33 members on our council, of which probably 27 of them are in good standing. A couple of them need to get their dues in. And Jerry did such a good job today, I'm going to double his salary. So twice zero is still zero. We're all volunteers. We have no paid administrators in the UVLC. Thank you.
Again, and thank you. And if would Jerry Walters come down, Commandant?
Please introduce yourself. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Jerry Walters. I am the current Commandant of the Marine Corps League for the Department of Minnesota. I'm also the Commandant for the Detachment, Heartland Detachment in the Brainerd Lakes area, Vice Commandant for the North Region of Minnesota, and an advisor to the National Council for the Marine Corps League.
Welcome.
Thank you. I want to thank you all for giving me a few minutes here to speak to you today. There's a little brochure that's being passed out, and it explains a little bit about what our Marine Corps does. And as you noted, there's a few Marines in here today, and thank you all for coming. And we're out to you and for all the veterans, whether you are a veteran that is on this committee or or not, you're all here because you are interested in supporting the lives of our veterans, young and old. I know we've heard a lot today about the older generation, and I'm certainly older than anybody in this panel up here, and so I will agree. But remember, there's a lot of young veterans that are coming home that are needing and want help, and that's what we're here for. As veterans, we, like me, we're stubborn. We don't like to ask for help, and it's hard to put ourselves forward in place of somebody else. That's what we're here for. That's what you're here for. As a member of the Marine Corps League, we have many major programs. The top one is Marines Helping Marines. It's like the Wounded Warrior Program, which we also support, but this happens to be the Wounded Marine Program. The youth programs of our state. We have a youth program. We have a youth fitness program. We have a youth leadership program. And we have the Eagle Scout, Boy Scout program, which we support. There's a lot of legislative things, and I don't get into that sort of thing myself. I just say we're here to help. We want to help our veterans. And as part of the Commander's Task Force, we are writing or trying to help our veterans through submitting legislation proposals for you and the entire legislature to consider to better the life of our veterans in the state of Minnesota. There's been a lot done, but I believe there's a lot to be done. And that is your job, as well as our job, to find these veterans, to help these veterans, whether they're there or not. I'm very concerned about these numbers. This 22 a day veterans committing suicide, how do we know? How many homeless are there? Is it 0%? Zero homeless? Veterans aren't going to tell you they're a veteran if they're homeless. You don't know who they are, but they're out there. And that's what our organizations, all myself and the other organizations here, as well as our county service officers, are there for, to find these veterans, to help them. And we can only do so much. The state has to offer some help, too. You've offered plenty, but I think there's always room for a little bit more. And with that, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today.
Are there any questions? Well, sir, on behalf of this committee, we'd like to thank you and for your service and also the rest of the Marines that have served from Minnesota.
I might add one more thing.
That's right. Go ahead.
Representative Detmer. Our organization is the Marine Corps League. We have regular membership and associate membership. Many of our regular members are made up of Marines, Navy Fleet Marine Force Corpsmen, Navy Fleet Marine Corps Force Chaplains who serve with Marine units. Many of our members are also members of the other organizations that you have here today and part of our Commander's Task Force. We also have an associate membership. We have several members in my own personal detachment as well as throughout the state from all branches of the military service. You do not have to be a Marine. We are mostly the Marines in our service, in our organization, are those that don't qualify for some of the limitations of the other major organizations. We have civilians who truly support what we are doing and are associate members of our Marine Corps League detachments, of which there are 14 throughout the state of Minnesota. This brief brochure that I handed out, a brochure that briefly explains it, what we do, several of the detachments in Minnesota have made up their own. Besides all the things that you see and hear about the Marine Corps League, which is maybe not that much, but we truly service our communities in our areas. The schools, the veterans that are there, the memorials. I personally am a member of the Honor Guard and perform TAPS, the final resolution for our fallen heroes, regularly, and seeing that they are put to rest and their loved ones are honored in the fitting role that they should be. So we have members of not just Marines, and so we say Marine Corps League. The only difference between us is that our regular members can hold one of the top four offices and the other members are all voting members, but they can't hold those four positions. So and that's what I have. Thank you.
And members with that, we'll give the Marine Corps the last word. This.
Hoorah!
There we go.
We got them over here, too. Now, some of us, semper fi.
This committee is not adjourned.
Thank you.